My name is Daisha Clay. I'm the audio librarian here at Classical 91.7. While I'm a real librarian, I have a deep, dark
secret.
I know very little about classical music. I grew up listening to rock. And I know something about jazz. But when it comes to classical... But I really want to learn. So, every week on this show, a classical music expert will give me a piece of classical music they think I should know. And then we'll discuss it. Come learn with me in the classical classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Daisha Clay, and here with me today is Classical 91.7's own Catherine Liu. We're so happy to have Catherine back. She just had a baby, and she's come back to us, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's great to be back. Thank you. Thanks for having me, Daisha.
Yeah. Thanks for being here. So we're going to be talking about Chinese New Year a little bit.
Yes. So I should say Gongxi Fa Cai, which is the traditional greeting for Chinese New Year.
Back at you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. It roughly translates to sort of wishing you prosperity or wishing you good fortune. Gongxi Fa Cai. So sorry to interrupt you, but I just wanted to give a shout out and a celebratory greeting to my Chinese New Year friends out there.
Lovely greeting. So yeah, we're going to sort of talk about Chinese New Year, what it means, and by way of discussing, so I was a little confused when I was looking at the CD that you gave me for homework. There were two Chinese composers named on it, so I'll let you introduce the piece and the composers, since you know I'm always confused about these things.
It was indeed composed by two people, Chen Gang and He Zanhao, and so I'm giving the family name first, as is the custom for Chinese names. So it's Mr. Chen and Mr. He, Gang and He Zanhao. So they composed this piece in 1959 while they were students at the Shanghai Conservatory. And it is considered one of the most famous pieces of Chinese music. It's kind of an East meets West concerto, taking Chinese melodies and rhythms and even operatic themes, because this piece is based on an opera, but kind of weaving them into a romantic Western flavored concerto.
And what's it called?
The Butterfly Lovers. That's the Butterfly Lovers Violin Concerto is the piece based on an opera called The Butterfly Lovers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's the recording that we're going to be using in the show is the violin is played by Gil Shaham, who is one of the very few violinists I've actually seen play live.
Oh,
yeah, I was at this conference at WNYC, and Gil played, and I had no idea who he was.
Turns I like how you just call him Gil.
Yeah, you know, Gil. He just seems like, that's why I liked him. He seemed like one of those guys that you could hang out with and say, hey, Gil, what's up? But he was amazing. Like, my jaw dropped. Mm-hmm. And he was also just so, like, funny and warm. So I'm glad we're getting to use a recording from him, since he's one of the few that I know.
Yeah, he's good. Anyway, we like him.
Yeah, yeah. So let's get to it. I want to hear some of this music. It's really, really lovely.
Sure. One of my favorites. One of my favorite pieces.
Birdies waking up in the morning.
You hear almost a butterfly theme happening here, that fluttering.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, the concerto is based on this ancient Chinese legend termed opera. So the concerto is divided. It's one continuous movement, but it's divided into many sections.
Okay.
And each section tells part of the story about the Butterfly Lovers. So in this first movement, can you hear the violin solo?
Yeah.
The violin represents our heroine. So let us meet Su Ying-tai, okay? She is the daughter of a rich family, and she's smart and sassy. And so I like to imagine this first movement like a spring day. Mm-hmm. And a spring day in a Chinese village. Mm-hmm. And what she's doing is she's going off to school despite her gender, because girls weren't expected to get an education back then. But this is her sassy part. But she disguises herself as a boy, and she's kind of going to head out to her studies. She's going to go to school anyway as a boy. So I think of her as, you know, I feel like this movement is, it's introducing her, that violin theme is her. And it feels like her heart is swelling, and there's so much hope, you know. Yeah. She's setting out on this beautiful spring day to fulfill her dream, which is to get an education.
She's like the Chinese yentl. I love how this music, as I was listening to the piece, it's like it tells a story. The sort of emotion of the piece, like, tells a story so clearly, it's like you can almost hear the words as you're listening to the violin. Mm-hmm. Such an emotive instrument.
Yeah, and the way the violin is playing, you hear how it's sort of sliding?
Mm-hmm.
That sliding sound.
Yeah.
It really kind of brings to mind the human voice, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's echoing Chinese opera. Like, if you've ever listened to a little bit of Chinese opera, kind of get that sound in your ear. It's very stylized and very, like, gliding and sliding and high and low. And I feel like the violin playing here is sort of mimicking that Chinese operatic singing.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you about that. You know, as I was listening to it, even if I hadn't known that this was written by Chinese composers, I would have thought, oh, this sounds so Chinese. And I was sort of thinking about why that is. And I know that there's also, in addition to Chinese opera having that sound, there's also a string instrument, and I don't know what it is, that I've heard many times that has that sort of...
Yes.
Yeah, what
I
is
that? I think
that?
What you're referring to is an instrument called the erhu, which is the Chinese violin.
Ah.
It's called the Chinese violin or Chinese fiddle sometimes. And it's, means two. Uh-huh. So the instrument's called erhu, and it has two strings. Only two strings, and there's a lot of sliding involved. And it has this really soulful sound. And sometimes this concerto is... Instead of a violin solo, a Western violin solo, it's sometimes performed with erhu or other Chinese instruments kind of interchanged to make it even more Chinese.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at the end of that first movement is where she meets Liang Sanbo, okay? That's the dude she eventually falls in love with. But they start off as classmates. Remember, she's disguised as a boy, so he doesn't know her true identity.
Ooh, what's going on now?
All right. In this second section, it gets really playful. And so they're off at school, and they're like becoming, you know, BFFs.
Right.
So the second playful section is it illustrates sort of the next 3 years of their friendship, the good times.
They're like,
yeah.
Yo, high five.
Yeah.
What's
like
up?
I think of like them playing pranks on each other and other classmates or something, like, you know, roughhousing or, you know, just good times. You know? And of course, studying.
Sure.
At the library. So this story is also sometimes thought of as like the Chinese Romeo and Juliet.
Ah, interesting.
Because it, you know, spoiler alert, doesn't exactly have a happy ending.
Oh.
Star-crossed lovers, but now we've met both of our main characters.
Yeah.
So we have Ying-tai, who's the violin, and Sambo is the cello. Mm-hmm. And so as the concerto develops, you're going to hear duets between the violin and the cello.
Okay.
Which will be them, you know, confessing their love for each other or
right.
bidding farewell. So
right.
you'll hear that. You can listen for that.
Okay.
But here life is good.
Yeah, it sounds very happy. Sounds very happy. It sounds... reminds me of that piece of music that's... oh my God. Ah, what is it? It's. I want to say it's Aaron Copland.
Rodeo?
Yeah,
it does have one. That galloping uh-huh. quality.
Yeah, I yeah. almost recognized a piece of classical music. Yes.
So now we're into the third section of the concerto, and as you can hear, the mood has changed, and that's because their school days are coming to an end, and they have to return home to their respective villages, and so there's sort of a sad parting, knowing that they're not going to be able to hang out anymore.
Yeah.
And plus, to complicate things, our heroine, she's fallen in love with her friend, who still thinks she's a dude. She tries to let him know what's up.
Yeah.
You know, hinting at it, but he just, it goes right over his head.
Yeah.
So. So you can hear all this, you know, gosh, I love this piece. You know, that longing.
Yeah.
And this sort of wistfulness and sort of almost sighing, you know, and this sort of farewell scene.
Yeah, you can hear all of those things so clearly in the violin.
And I think you'll even hear that intertwining between the violin and cello at the end of this section.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we're coming up on that. Here we go. They're saying goodbye to each other.
Au revoir, Pee-wee. So this was written in, you said, the 50s, is it right?
1959.
Okay. What time period is this opera set in? Was it for them, like, were they writing about their sort of contemporaneous time period, or were they talking about a past?
I believe talking about a past,
okay.
because the opera is based on an ancient story.
Yeah.
The story dates back to like the 3rd, 4th, 5th century.
Okay.
This concerto is sometimes even called the Tchaikovsky Concerto of the East.
Really?
And I don't know if you know the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto. That's like one of the biggies, one of the big Western Romantic warhorse violin concertos. And so sometimes this is called the Tchaikovsky Concerto of the East because it's virtuosic and it's, you know, got big, hard-on-your-sleeve emotions and that romantic expression to it.
Yeah.
So the music has taken a dramatic turn.
Yeah.
And what's happening now is that our heroine has returned home, you know, from her schooling,
yeah.
as we talked about before, and her father, dun-dun-dun, has decided that she should marry the son of a rich family.
Oh,
so he's arranged
no.
a marriage for her. And here you hear all this sort of frenzied violin playing. It's her, like, protesting and, like, upset.
Right. She's saying, no, this cannot be.
So one of the things I really enjoy about this story, or I find very touching, is that, you know, this strong female character.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she's sweet and willowy, uh-huh. as you hear in the violin part, but she's also feisty. Just, she's spirited. A little bit of a rebel. Like me, no.
Catherine, you're a total rebel.
So, you know, you can imagine her, like, struggling with her emotions.
Yeah.
Confused, arguing with Dad.
Yeah. I imagine she's run out of the house at this point, and she's, you know, going to find her friend / would-be lover.
Cliffhanger there. Musical cliffhanger.
What will happen? Oh no, now she's sad.
And also what's happened, meanwhile, is that the love of her life, Yang Sam-bo, mm-hmm. he has discovered the truth, who she really is,
yeah,
and that she's in love with him, and he's in love with her too.
Yeah, which to his great relief, he finds out, you know, that she's a girl. I imagine he's probably a little relieved about that.
And he goes to visit her, but it's too late because she's already gonna marry somebody else.
No,
mm-mm.
This is horrible.
Here we hear the violin and the cello again. Uh-huh. So they're sad, another sad duet, you yeah. know, maybe finally confessing their love for each other, but also realizing they can't be together. I know, do you have tissues? Can we get you a tissue, Daisha?
Okay, I'm good.
What I also love about this story is that this theme of family.
Yeah.
I mean, family is so important in Chinese culture.
Yeah.
And I think if this were a Western love story, take Romeo and Juliet, for example, they would have maybe just run off together and, you know, to heck with the parents, right? Just run off together, or maybe eloped or something, which is what Romeo and Juliet do. But in this story, she obeys her parents. And I think in a lot of Chinese stories, I mean, family and honoring your elders and your parents is a big part of the culture. Mm-hmm. So in this story, you know, that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, she's gonna try to respect her parents' wishes. And that's why it's not going to work for them.
That's a really different take. Yeah, because in America, I mean, you know, our country began because people said, I'm not going to take your oppression anymore. I'm leaving. I'm going to start my own damn country. And so to hear like a young person going, okay, I'll do as you wish. Yeah. I think that's very different.
And it's interesting because she's a complicated character because, like, you know, before I said she is feisty and she does have a rebellious streak, but she is also traditional in that sense.
Like, yeah.
That she tries to obey her parents.
Yeah, that tension you can hear in the music, too.
And I believe we're on a section that you said you really liked in particular, right? A lot of percussion.
Yeah, this is very cool. Again, I hear the Copland influence.
And I'm not a percussionist. I don't know if that's a woodblock or some kind of percussion instrument like that, but I like it, too. It makes me think of, like, a racing heartbeat.
Uh-huh.
Like, really agitated. And what's happening in this section, Yang Sam-bo, the boy, he, you know, has discovered that they can't be together, she's going to marry somebody else, his beloved is going to marry somebody else. Mm-hmm. And he is lovesick. He is distraught. His heart is racing and pounding, and he dies of a broken heart.
He actually dies of a broken heart? Oh, my Lord.
I know, this is intense, right?
It really is.
And what we're working up to is that it gets even more dramatic.
No.
Okay. After he dies, Zuing Tai, the girl, visits his grave, and there's like a bolt of thunder, a bolt of lightning or something, and you're going to hear this crash. Uh-huh. There's this big crash at the tomb.
Yeah.
And the tomb opens up, and she throws herself in. I know you're speechless.
I don't even, like, I mean, does she die? Is she just, like, or does she just sort of, like, throw herself in and,
well, even,
know,
even
weeps?
If you want to hear even more dramatic details of the story, one version of the story is that after her beloved dies, right,
yeah,
she has to go ahead and get married to the arranged, carry out the arranged marriage. But she says that the wedding procession must pass by the gravesite.
Yeah.
And so on her wedding day, they're passing, you know, the wedding procession, they're going past the gravesite, and that's when, like, the bolt of lightning strikes, and then she throws herself in.
Oh, God.
We really shouldn't be laughing.
No, we shouldn't be laughing. It's just so overwrought, you know? It's like, it's very melodramatic.
There's the crash.
There it is.
There's sort of something inevitable, like this, like fate, right, or something, right?
Yeah.
This feeling of,
like,
fate finally. The final section, it's almost like an epilogue.
Yeah.
So I know that last section was kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
But there is kind of a hopeful ending in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, you can hear, right, this mood has changed again. Mm-hmm. It's lighter.
It's back to what we were hearing at the beginning.
There's maybe even some kind of catharsis or release now. Mm-hmm. So after she's thrown herself in the tomb, you know, to her death, presumably.
Right.
They're both transformed into butterflies. And these butterflies fly out of the tomb, and can hear, you know, the fluttering and the music.
Yeah.
And they can be together now.
Oh.
So it's bittersweet.
That is sweet. Which always signals happiness.
And you hear a return of, like, the theme at the beginning?
Yeah. You know what I thought was funny when I was looking at... Or not funny, but interesting. When I was looking at the names of the movements... So these are Chinese composers. The movements are still in Italian.
Mm-hmm.
How? Why? I mean, I've asked a lot
it's
of
east
people
meets west.
Who've yeah. come on the show this question. Why the Italian? And what I've heard from people is that it's essentially like we use Latin in, you know, to talk about science, sciencey things. You know, it's kind of the, like, the sort of universal language used to talk about this kind of thing. Like, anybody from anywhere can look at that, you know, adagio and go, oh, I know what that is. Even if their language is written in, not only are the words different, but the, you know, the characters are different. The whole basis for the language is different.
And I think because this concerto was conceived as sort of a Western, like an East meets West concerto, like written in a Western form, that they probably went ahead and used the traditional sort of Western notation for the music, including the Italian sort of tempo markings. That would be my guess. As opposed to like a piece written for like a traditional Chinese orchestra, like that might have totally different notation, just markings in Chinese, I would assume. I know you wanted me to talk a little bit about Chinese New Year.
Right, since, I mean, I know this piece isn't, you know, specifically about Chinese New Year.
Correct.
But it's rare that we actually talk about a Chinese composer, you know, and so it's sort of in honor of Chinese New Year.
Yes, yes.
That we're, yeah.
And Chinese New Year, it begins January 31st.
Ah, yes.
It's celebrated for 15 days.
That's fun.
Indeed.
2 weeks of party.
Yes. Because it's a major holiday. It's one of the most important traditional holidays. It's the Year of the Horse this year. We were in Year of the Snake. So goodbye, snake.
Bye, snake.
Hello, horse.
Hey, horse.
Those born in the Year of the Horse. Now, what are you, Daisha? I think you told me.
I'm a dragon.
You're a dragon. I'm a rabbit. Oh, I could go through the zodiac. It's a 12-year cycle.
Yeah, I really, like, what? Okay, so what's the deal with the animals?
I don't know. Such a bad Chinese person.
You're a bad Chinese.
There's a legend associated with the animals. I can tell you that the 12 animals, I'll go through them quickly. Got rat, ox, tiger, rabbit, dragon, snake, horse, which is where we are now, sheep, monkey, rooster, dog, and pig. So, indeed, why those animals?
Yeah.
but those born in the Year of the Horse are considered active and energetic, quick-witted, rebellious and hot-headed at times, hardworking. You can almost think of a horse, right? You can see how these characteristics are associated with the actual animal. So hardworking, adept at handling money, proud yet sweet-natured, and they'll do anything for love.
Ah, yeah. Interesting. So this piece is totally appropriate for, kind of appropriate for the Year of the Horse. Mm-hmm.
So as the piece ends, then it's this, you know, butterflies disappearing off into the distance, a very sort of peaceful, quiet ending.
Yeah.
So it's a sad story, but, you know, in some way, love does triumph. So, like I said, kind of bittersweet.
That's such an interesting and different resolution to this sort of story than, as you said, we would have in the West. And it's kind of lovely. It's like, they lose, in a way, they don't get to be together, you know, in their human lives. But they win in that they are maintaining their respect for their elders and they're sort of preserving these important cultural standards, I guess. And yet they also, in a way, do wind up getting to be together. It's almost as if they're rewarded for their good behavior in the face of really difficult circumstances.
That's interesting, I like that. It's an interesting way to look at it.
Instead of getting that sort of immediate gratification of getting to be together and then having the inevitable tragic ending that always comes with that.
What's that? Butterflies.
Our producer Todd just reminded me that butterflies don't live for very long, so my whole theory is blown. Thanks, Todd. Well, Catherine, this has been so cool. Like, I mean, this piece is really, really pretty.
You like it?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I may have to go back and listen to it again. And maybe I'm going to check out some other stuff by these composers because I'm intrigued. So, Catherine, thanks for coming back to the Classical Classroom.
My pleasure.
We're so glad to have you back at the station. I'm sure your baby is busy being adorable right now.
My snake baby.
Your snake baby.
She was born in this previous year. Yes.
Well, and happy Chinese New Year to everyone.
Ditto. Happy Year of the Horse.
By the way, everyone, Catherine is going to be doing a 2-hour special of Chinese music on Chinese New Year. That's Friday, January 31st on Classical 91.7, which you can listen to on the Houston airwaves at 91.7 or online at classical917.org. It'll be playing twice, once from 10 to noon, or sorry.
Noon to 2.
Noon to 2. Such a short memory. From noon to 2, and then it's airing again from
10 p.m. to midnight.
10 to midnight. Okay, so if you'd like to learn a little bit more about Chinese music, tune in. Everybody, thanks for listening to the Classical Classroom. If you want to hear past episodes or see what's coming up on the show, go to classical917.org/classroom. If you have a question that you would like to hear addressed on the show, or you just want to send me a letter because you want to talk to me about something, write to me at dclay@classical917.org. Oh, and by the way, my New Year's resolution is to go see more classical music performances. So if you would like for me to come and see your performance or your organization's performance, go to our website and there are instructions for how to make your case for why I should come to yours because, you know, I'm a very busy lady. I can't make them all. But, you know, if you convince me, I'll come to yours. Thanks for listening and we'll catch you next time.